Before I start the sermon, I want to let you know I'm going to talk about abortion today. And as you take that in, I'd like you to think about that somewhere between 25 and 33% of the women and people with uteruses in this room will have had or had an abortion by the time they are 45. If this topic is sensitive for you, I will hold you in love. If you love someone who has faced questions about their pregnancy options, I'm going to encourage you to explore pastoral care options here at your fellowship. Unitarian Universalism supports all people's pregnancy options as valid. And I'm also going to teach you a term, a new term that is being taught is called prenate, and prenate just means before born. I teach you that because a lot of people, when they talk about abortion, talk about baby, yet we aren't allowed to, nor would we ever want to, abort babies. Babies are humans that have been born and can survive without a womb. Likewise, in the very early stages of abortion, which is when most abortions occur, it is not even a fetus yet. It is a bastion. It is a gathering of cells. So prenate, you will hear me say, and that means before born. Cool? I want to make sure you're alive. You can talk to me. It was really enlightening for me to learn that being quiet, it was seen as polite culture in white culture, and so that's a very white culture thing to do, and you don't have to embrace white culture during my sermon if you would care not to. All right, good. I also want to thank you for having babies in here, because we all know if we don't hear babies crying in a church service, your church is dying. That's right. Did you ever hold a belief you thought you understood, only to realize you didn't get it at all? Contemporary UU minister and chaplain for the Maine Warden Service, Kate Braidstrup, says, "You can't subtract pain, but you can add love." A few years ago, I was given the opportunity to provide spiritual and emotional support to women and their loved ones at Planned Parenthood in the Milwaukee Clinic. It was part of my seminary studies. Many people don't realize that there are only three clinics in the state of Wisconsin that offer abortion. Even hospitals that say they do not. They will put people out who are facing life-threatening medical decisions and issues so that they don't have to say they ever perform one. As I was interviewed for the position, I thought I really understood pro-choice issues. And little did I know, I was clueless. Providing spiritual and emotional care to women and their families has challenged me, and it's grown my heart, and it's deepened my understanding of my own privilege. I want to remind you that the word privilege means options. I have developed now a theology of abortion that I use today as an example of how we can all look at topics in the headlines and add love. I'm preaching today on how we approach controversial topics as we carry out our Unitarian Universalist values. And I'm going to encourage you to dive deeper and explore topics your faith supports in a manner that deepens your theology and might even help you change hearts and minds. I have known from an early age that abortion was not a neutral topic. I understood birth control well enough to know that people needed it. I couldn't imagine telling people how many children to have. And as I grew into an adult, I read up on issues and I voted about them, including access to abortion, contraception, women's health. I thought I was rather informed. I voted accordingly, and if you had asked me, I would simply say I was pro-choice, and I used to say something I now regret. I would say, I would never choose to have an abortion myself. And I now realize my theology was flawed. My ideas about abortion came from a point of view of my privilege, not love, because even saying I would never have an abortion is meaningless. You never know what you would do if you were faced with that decision and you were carrying out a pregnancy you so desperately wanted, but something went horribly wrong, or you didn't have the options that you currently have that led you to make that statement. You might encounter something, like in many stages of life, where you would be faced with unexpected decisions to have to make. And if you think that that's your position, you probably have options. I know that's how I looked at it. I had options. I could rearrange my life. I could find someone to help me live with them. I could do something. I had privilege because I had choices. It's a moral decision to have children. We as Unitarian Universalists need to phrase it that way. It is a moral decision to have children. And our faith asks us to factor in things like affordable, reliable, reputable childcare, access to education that's of quality, housing and nutrition, healthcare. These are things that we all as Unitarian Universalists say that we believe in. And if we really believe in those things, then we believe having a child is a moral decision factoring all those things into our choices. So our faith calls us to examine the morality of this world that we bring children into. And our faith supports families having healthy options. That is our theology. So deepening my understanding and being able to tell stories from behind the headlines, stories just like what Delio was told in the Hemlock Tree Elf, that's how I can piece together people's hearts with the complexities of what it means to truly trust women, to trust families, and trust their own bodies. It is in stories that we change hearts and minds. The story that John told of his girlfriend's family going to church and seeing a variety of people, that's a story about Unitarian Universalism. Now, when I started at Planned Parenthood, they had never considered having a chaplain. They thought, as well as I thought, that I would bring people juice or cookies. On my first day, I was shadowing a very seasoned nurse practitioner when another medical technician asked us to come look at an ultrasound. The patient in the room thought that she was 6 to 8 weeks pregnant. She had a number of signs in her body that made her think that's what the number was. But her ultrasound was measuring at over 24 weeks. Hearing the description, the nurse I was with sprung into action. She gathered, I kid you not, a 3-inch stack of papers. She got every kind of resource from government brochures on health programs and adoption. She got programs on nutrition and foster care and brochures as well from 3 clinics in the United States that perform late-term abortions. Now, I want to pause and say late-term abortion is a term that's made up. It's a term that's been made up by people who want us to believe what Donald Trump said a few weeks ago, that somehow babies are being born in maternity wings of hospitals and then doctors are deciding whether or not to put them to death. That's a crazy thing. It's a complete lie. So late-term abortion just means later in the term that abortions are allowed and that the prenate is not viable. Back to my story. Soon we get in the room, and the nurse introduces she and I, and she puts the Doppler on the stomach of the patient, and this prenate rolls over and brings their face up to the screen and waves their hand. I am flooded with judgment. Thankfully, I say nothing. What do I know? I listen. I hold a box of Kleenex while this young woman tearfully cries, telling us the most horrendous story that I still get goosebumps when I think about it. A story of physical and emotional abuse, of hunger, of health disparities, of violent wounding. I'm even looking at the girl and I'm thinking, I didn't even think she looked old enough to get pregnant. Shows you how old I am. When everyone who, you know, could be under 30 somehow looks 40, you know. In that moment, I realize I know nothing. I know nothing about the complexities of those seeking abortions, because reading is one thing, but sitting next to them, smelling them, blotting their tears, that is completely different. And I had this flood come over me when I realized I thought I understood reproductive justice, and I thought I understood women's health, but I understood that from my own access to education, to healthcare, and to options. Occupying this body that has been educated on matters of health and how to access resources and how to get myself emotional and spiritual support at times of crisis, that meant I had come to a position around abortion and other controversial topics from an intellectual understanding rather than a place of love. If I wanted to start acting in empathy, I was going to need to look at the scars our society inflicts upon people. I was going to need to learn about real stories, real people who I can talk to and listen and relate their views, and especially relate those views when I'm speaking with other people that I don't agree with. My work at Planned Parenthood made me realize that I had no idea how to address that because I myself had never faced having so few options. And in that moment, I realized I approached lots of hot-button issues from my privileged social location. Remember, privileged means social location with options. I approached it from my identities, and I had used my reading as my method of learning rather than sitting with humans from other walks of life. Sitting with humans from walks of life I knew nothing about. And my work at Planned Parenthood has helped me examine how I go past sympathy for people impacted by issues I say I stand for, and go into true empathy. So how do we, as a people, go deeper into the headlines and instead travel with people as humans in love? It's hard to love people when we do not know their struggle. How do we know? If we've had every comfort and basic need met, if our ancestors always had their civil rights, this is not to say we have never had pain of our own. Of course we have. We're human and we're imperfect. We've all had pain. The real question is, how do we as Unitarian Universalists affirm each person's inherent worth and their dignity? How do we consider people whose lives are nothing like ours? This is not simple. We so desperately want to fact things away. We will ply those whom we disagree with more evidence. I've got evidence. I've got articles. I've got the New York Times, right? I heard on NPR. Our ego thinks we will make them think like us. Go back to the reading, them and us. And they will not. Because stories and experiences change hearts, not statistics. We hate this. Unitarian Universalism hates this. We want facts. We're a science-believing people. The truth is, that's not why we change minds. That's not how it works. Study after study proves it. Now, I have told that story about the prenate rolling over and the hand going across the belly to many people. And everyone asks, what happened to the mother? You want to know, don't you? Catching on. This is good. This is good. I wish I'd be with you again. I have no idea what happened to her. In Wisconsin, there is no way to terminate a pregnancy over 20 weeks. At 24 weeks, she would have had to travel to one of three clinics in either New Mexico, Colorado, or Washington State to end the pregnancy, and it would have cost between $10,000 and $35,000 in cash plus travel, plus time off work. A lot of people don't understand why people have abortions later in the term that they're allowed. It's because they need time off work, and it's because a lot of states like ours have a 24-hour wait, and they have to see the same doctor, and there's a lot of scheduling things that go into that. But an abortion at 24 weeks would have to go to one of those three special clinics in the United States. Procedures of that nature can take days to complete. Likewise, the Milwaukee clinic could not legally follow up with her. We couldn't find out if she kept that prenate or if she raised it. Did she make an adoption plan? Did she get the resources she needed? Any contact could be interpreted as trying to convince her to terminate, even if no one ever said anything like that. She was welcome to call the clinic, but we could not call her. Think, too, about those false statements that the 45th president said in Green Bay just about 10 days ago. That term, late-term abortion, is fake. It means what people are really talking about is the range of when abortions can happen before the prenate can exist outside of the womb. It's a made-up term. What they are referring to is abortion that happens in the late stages of before viability, often over 16 weeks but less than 26 weeks. Most abortions take place in the first trimester. I show people who ask for it the remains of their pregnancy, and I always say to them, what do you expect to see before I show them? And inevitably, they all say, I expect to see a... And I'll look at their chart, and I'll say, oh, well, you're about 8 weeks pregnant, so have you ever seen a robin's egg fall out of a tree? It'll look a little like the yolk from that. Even when they're further along, they've never, ever looked to me like a baby. And that may or may not matter to you. But I just like to prepare people for that, and that's why we've come to that word prenate. Most of the people I accompany through abortions are in their second trimester, often because they are alone and have less options and less privilege. Whatever happened to that woman, I pray for her daily, because I know whatever happened, that her life is very difficult. And so if we want peace, if we are called to follow the principles of our UU faith, if we want to be evangelical Unitarian Universalists, that means telling the good news, yeah. If we really want that, then we need to have those stories in our back pocket, right? That's how we go deeper into empathy, and that's how we create love. Because, as my favorite Dr. Brené Brown says, empathy fuels connection, sympathy drives disconnection. So we have to ask ourselves some questions. Are we prepared to love others even when we have not experienced or understand their struggles? Will we challenge one another here and support one another in doing this work? Are you ready to listen? Yeah. Are you ready to connect? Yes. Even when it makes you uncomfortable. I'd also like to pause and say, at the church I serve, we had a really uncomfortable conversation for some people a couple weeks ago. And Reverend Eric, who's my teaching minister, said to them, I'd like you to stop and think about the fact that discomfort is not a question of safety. So you are safe when you're uncomfortable. You're still safe. So we want to be in discomfort because that's where we learn. That's where we're vulnerable. So we can hold discomfort. It's okay. We can do our spiritual practices to engage in discomfort. You can breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth, right? We can do things to make ourselves deal with the discomfort. And there is a promise of peace and universal love that is worth the investment of hearing real stories that make us uncomfortable. We can do better than saying we are simply for or against a hot topic of our time. Because every time we put ourselves in another person's place, we can look into empathy. And Brené Brown discusses the four steps of showing empathy. One, putting yourself in somebody else's shoes. Two, staying out of judgment and listening. Recognizing, three, our own emotion in that person that you maybe have felt before, not because you experienced that situation before, but because you felt sadness or you felt a powerful quandary or you have felt like there are no good choices in this situation. And last, communicating that you can recognize that emotion. I see that you feel sad. I have felt sad before too. I don't know what your decision will be, but I can sit with you while you make it. I can accompany you on the journey. I can listen to how you went about making your decision. It is when you go deeper into that understanding and into the controversy, that is where we can hope to find humanity, common ground, and ultimately peace. One of my heroes is Reverend Dr. Howard Thurman, and he said, hate begins with no contact. Putting yourself in another person's shoes works best with human contact. It's really hard to put shoes on over the newspaper, right? Over Facebook. If you want to go from your religion to relationship in the beloved community, we have to listen to people who are living with issues we find controversial and uncomfortable. You're going to hear about your budget shortfall in a little while, and that might make you feel uncomfortable because you have the potential to lose things and people you love, or time with people, or the quality of life of this congregation, right? So we want a way that we can come together and have fun giving together, because it's really fun to say, I build that place, even with the tiniest donation, right? That's fun. So I'm calling you here to step into the discomfort and listen to people who are living with issues. Issues that you may find controversial or you may not agree with, and you might be thinking, Denise, do I have to meet new people? Do I really have to put myself out there? Do I have to volunteer? And before you say, I can't do that, I don't have the time, consider for yourself how listening to real people and putting yourself into uncomfortable situations, that's what helps us live out our UU values. This is a living faith. We don't have a closed canon. We keep building the canon. We are building what creates Unitarian Universalism. And so people that we can imagine in our mind or read about in the news are but text on a page, really on a screen. People we sit with, on the other hand, people we listen to without judgment become not just an issue, but they become a face you love on this journey. Can you sit with people whose lives are not like your own? Can you hear about their loves and their excitement and their sadness and their stories? Can you sing the same hymn with them here at church? I say, yes, we can. We can do this work together. When we listen to one another, we can change hearts. We can change laws. We can make a difference for real people in our human communities. When our spirits deepen and our hearts grow, that's when we create peace. That's what they're talking about. That's what the bumper stickers are about. Thurman says every person, think about this, every person in this room wants to be cared for, wants to be sustained by the assurance of the watchful and thoughtful attention of others. We all want that. Such is the meaning of love. If our UU principles and the great, late Reverend Dr. Howard Thurman are telling us that we are all sustained by love, we must honor justice. We are illustrating empathy. If we only deliver and delineate our most important values, like the reading today, into for or against, are we really getting to empathy? If all told you was that there was a person I met at Planned Parenthood who was seeking an abortion who was actually more than 6 months pregnant. You, like me, might have had a variety of judgments and assumptions that came from your privilege or my privilege or from occupying places where we have choices. The breath. It is in the listening that we will hear about the issues around education, around the moral access to health care, and even the impenetrable abuse prevalent in her life. And imagine, please, the power of each of us here doing that. How would our love grow? How would it grow? Our hearts might just break for the injustice of the entire situation. But remember, you can't subtract pain, but you can add love. And it is when you add love that our hearts crack open and the peace flows in.